Live FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And stay tuned for Back of the Book. And it's here
this week, right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all, "Are vaccines bad for you?" If the Earth's flat, they are. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio Sprinkles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things on this program. And you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And you can look around up there, and on the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see a blue navigation frame. At the top of it, it says Latest Back of the Book Program Links. And click on that, and you'll get to the web page for tonight's program. We do a separate web page for each radio program. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 63rd pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And they're not only dangerous because of the virus, they're dangerous because the crazies on the subway are attacking people in all sorts of ways. Oh, man. And our top story of the past week is we have rocketed up to 116 followers on Twitter. Oh, one more person actually found Twitter and said, "Let me get right on there and follow our Paul Martin on Twitter." Good grief. Isn't that amazing? So there we did. And we did that. The next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held Wednesday, November 10th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. This will be the final meeting of the 11th WBAI local station board. And the 12th local station board will be seated in December. I believe it's December 8th that the 12th LSB will be seated. And half the people on it will be people who were just elected in the election we just had. And we hope all of you voted for good guys and not the bad guys who want to give the station away to cable access outfit in Manhattan. Ugh. God, disaster if too many of them are on the damn LSB. And some program notes. Last week's program got fouled up again. At this point, I can't even remember how many times something has happened to this radio program since we went weekly almost a year ago. We've had them just not get played at all. We've had the totally wrong one played. We've had some of them going on the air very late. Well, that happened this past week, a week ago, and the actual program went on late. And what happened was, first there was yet another problem with the computer. And then the previous week's program got aired. After, a few minutes, it was fixed by our own Maxwell J. Schmid, who, it turns out, actually had left the station and heard this and came back in and, got things going. But it turned out that what was ready was the previous program. So that was going on the air. And so Max said, uh-oh, and found somewhere the program that we were supposed to do that we'd prepared for last week. And he put that on, but that didn't get on the air until 5:18 a.m. And then there were some more little things that happened after that. WBAI management did re-air the entire program at 6 a.m. the next day, October 17th. And the archive was fixed so that you can hear the entire program in that archive. And the interim program director said that she and the WBAI operations department were going to have a meeting about this situation this past week. I don't know if they did or not, but I hope they did. And problems with the computer or whatever. Really, this is amazing to me here. Oh, well. That such things could happen. For next week's program, Pickles of the North is preparing a segment about Halloween, or Samhain, as her and my ancient ancestors called that date. And she's also going to talk about an anniversary that will be occurring next week. And we are preempted on November 6th. And that's 2 weeks from now, so we're preempted 2 weeks from now for a fundraising special. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 242,867,421 on Friday, and global deaths reached 4,935,634. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 45,361,618, and the death toll in America was 734,838. So 11,935 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. That's slightly up from the previous week. So the numbers seem to be fluctuating at this point. They're not trending up. They're not trending down. They're waffling back and forth. However, we're still seeing deaths at an order of magnitude higher than they had been during the summer. And the holidays are coming, and people are already going indoors more. The unvaccinated people are still supplying the victims of almost all of the deaths. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course, and this was all mostly preventable. And we'll note that Colin Powell, who was the big general and who was Secretary of Defense, he died of COVID-19 this past fortnight. However, he had multiple myeloma and
Parkinson's disease.
Parkinson's disease. And I'm wondering if he had Agent Orange poisoning. because he did two tours in Vietnam. And, yeah, a lot of us who went there got Agent Orange poisoning. And, oh, yeah, that's something to look forward to.
The thing is, if more people had gotten vaccinated, then Delta wouldn't have circulated and he, well, could have been still alive.
Yeah. Again, as we've pointed out, studies have shown that an unvaccinated person who's surrounded by vaccinated people is far less likely to get infected than a vaccinated person who's surrounded by unvaccinated people, because the viral load in the air, the amount of virus that's going to be hitting them, is much higher if they're surrounded by unvaccinated people. So, yeah. So that was another issue of somebody who was vaccinated who has in fact died, but he had these other factors that went into it, and that's what killed him. Meanwhile, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin has locked down Russia for a week in order to deal with the pandemic surge there. A lot of Russians don't really trust the Russian-developed vaccine for COVID-19. If they want to go someplace outside of Russia, they need to get themselves another vaccine, because a lot of other places don't trust the Russian vaccine either. Most of the Russians are flocking to Eastern Europe, where they have the main vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. I don't think a whole lot of the Russians are flocking to the so-called People's Republic of China for their vaccine. Probably not even as, you know, not better than the Russian thing. Putin himself has, of course, had to quarantine due to exposure to people he works with who had gotten the disease. And of course, we've been seeing pictures of events where thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of people not wearing masks are jammed in together. And at one of the college football games, the people came out of the stands after the football game and converged on the center of the field, and they're all jumping up and down together. Of course, they're mostly college age, and you still think you're invulnerable then. You still have that child's view of the universe when you're in the 18 to 21-year-old range, although some people are coming out of that by then, but a lot of them not. And so, you know, are we going to see more surges out of things like that? And we have more of these football games and other things where they're all jammed together there. And, yeah, the autumn could really end up being a very, very difficult time, because a lot of people are going to end up infecting each other. And there's one thing that I think many people find attractive about conspiracy frauds. You know, I don't like to call them conspiracy theories, because theory is a word that has an actual meaning to it. And the word theory is not a synonym for bull bleep. And a lot of what they call the conspiracy theory stuff is really conspiracy bull bleep. And so, you know, geez. So I don't like to call them conspiracy theories. I think that's not good, and I try to get away from that. So crazy conspiracy frauds is one of the things to call them. And, you know, one of the things about these things is if you like one, you might very well like others. It's sort of like an ice cream, you know? I think somebody had an ice cream commercial like that once. Yes, if you like our vanilla, you'll love our chocolate and raspberry and other stuff. Yeah, give the raspberry to the conspiracy crackpots. And there are a hell of a lot of conspiracy frauds around. There's an awful lot of this. Of course, that's understandable, because any jackass can make one up. And they don't have to make any sense at all. If you listen to some of these things, you say, well, that's obviously not true. That obviously can't be true. And a lot of it is, some of it is stuff that's made up by kids. You know, a kid in high school, maybe even in grammar school, comes up with an idea and has another idea on top of that, and bang, he has one of these conspiracy frauds to bring to people, and he tells classmates, and of course they're all on online and social media these days. So immediately the thought of some 11-year-old goes flying out to the world, and there are plenty of adults who are idiots. And so a lot of them will then say, oh, gee, yeah, because they already like conspiracy junk. And they say, oh, another conspiracy fraud, although they won't call it a fraud. And they probably don't call it a conspiracy anything. They probably call it the great, wonderful truth or something. And anyway, so they pick it up and it starts going viral. And, you know, it just goes around the world, even though sane, rational people look at it and instantly say, no, that's not realistic at all. And that's just with the ones that are really unrealistic. Some of them are involved, and people take little pieces of stuff that's written somewhere, and they link things together that by themselves sound okay, but you put them together and they say something stupid, but they still can sound okay. And so they put that out there, and there you go. And Jesus Christ, you know?
I'll give you one example. Someone in my family was complaining that, oh, the vaccines, the big lie about vaccines, they were the magic bullet. Oh, they didn't turn out to be the magic bullet that everyone said they were. Nobody said they were a magic bullet. No one did. There were very specific criteria put forth. What percentage of protection you would have from each as the data came in. So that's one example.
Yeah, there are epidemiologists in the world, and epidemiology is a course of study in a profession. And they figured out quite a while back how vaccines work, how diseases spread. There are mathematical formulas that will tell you how a disease will spread, especially if nobody does anything about it, which is why it goes from, you know, 3 or 4 people, it's exponential, and suddenly there are millions, you know? And what do we got now? 242 million plus people in the world have been infected. And we know that's a low number. We know there are places that are just not reporting these things. And so they know how these things work. They know how a disease will spread. They know how a vaccine can work, if it's good, to tamp down the disease. But a vaccine doesn't automatically eliminate a disease. Not like you snap your fingers, it's gone. You know, you have to really go after it, like smallpox.
And that does not invalidate the vaccine.
Right. It's just the way things actually work. We're talking about things in the physical world here, and it's not idealistic with magic bullet crap. It's that people, a certain number of people will not get it, you know, and that's how it works. It's statistical. You have 100% of people, and a virus comes in from somewhere, and if you do nothing, you're going to get a certain percentage, sometimes higher, sometimes lower, of those people who are going to get sick. If you do something about it, like put in a vaccine, depending on the efficacy of that vaccine, and they're not all the same. Some vaccines are iffy. I mean, a vaccine that's 50% is going to save a lot of people, even though it's only 50% effective. It's better than 0% effective. And so it depends on how it works. Now, these vaccines like Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, initially, they give you like 90-something percent protection. And so that's very effective. And yeah, by the way, I got my shot this past week. Yes, I went out, and Pickles and I went to the VA hospital, and we got me my booster shot, my Pfizer booster. And at the same time, I also got my flu vaccine for 2021. So I got all vaxxed up this past week here. And we said, oh boy, let's see if there are side effects. The side effects were really minimal. Mostly it was the proverbial soreness at the injection site. You know, your shoulder gets a little sore for a couple of days. And I felt a little crummy for maybe 24 hours after that, something like that. But a little crummy isn't that bad a thing. And so this is, you know, I put my bod, my fabulous bod, where my mouth is. And I say, yeah, I'm getting vaccinated at the first chance I get. And this was the first chance I got to get my booster shot of Pfizer, and I got it. So there's that. Now my immunity must be pretty nicely popped up there again. So there is that. And if there has to be another booster down the road, I'll get that too. Again, you know, whom are you going to believe? The people who have studied this kind of thing their whole lives, it's their work, they have a talent for it, they are in a bunch of people who study this. It's a field of study, and there are these people who know about this, and it's not like there's three or four guys doing this. There are thousands and thousands of people with this medical knowledge around the world, and they know what they're doing pretty much. I mean, they can make mistakes, but they understand these things. Or you can believe some guy who has no training in this area whatsoever, and who, guy or woman, who's just saying, this, that, and the other thing. Some of it probably gotten from a grammar school kid who decided to type something in and put it on social media, which is really something that happens. And, you know, you could decide which of those. You know, the guy who does what he calls research, which means online, and you know, he comes up with these nonsense things. Or you can believe the professionals who really, when they say, well, it's like this. Well, how do you know that? Oh, here's the paper I did on it. And you can see all the citations of the other papers that also agree with this. And, you know, this is vast body of scientific knowledge. It's a lot deeper than what some yutz is posting online. So, Christ.
I know a big part of the internet has become a yutz haven.
Yes. And so the conspiracy crap goes on, and there's a lot of it because the people who like some of it like almost all of it. And the crazy conspiracy disinformation we hear about COVID-19 shares true believers with all sorts of other such crazy things. And while some people find it hard to believe, there really are people who buy into the disinformation that the planet Earth is flat. Now, I know somebody was, oh, that's absurd. That's absurd. Yes, it's absurd. Because there is a lot of evidence, scientific evidence, showing that the Earth is a sphere. It's an oblate spheroid, actually. But it's not flat. I mean, you can choose to get your information from some guy who looks around and says, oh, I'm looking around, it looks flat to me, because he's looking at what's within, you know, 20 yards of himself. Or you can do things like say, hey, you know, there are photographs of the entire planet from outer space, and look at that, it's an oblate spheroid. You could choose either one of those. And also there are other things. Somebody was doing something on TV, and what they did was they said, you know, flat Earth, it's so stupid, you don't have to go to outer space. And what they did was they had a laser beam, and they had people in a boat, and they had a fixed target on the boat, and the people in the boat rowed out to a little ways into a lake, and when they were right next to the shore, everything was lined up and the laser beams right on this one exact position. And you know how laser beams can put a point of light on an exact position. And so they row out a ways and the laser beam is left where it is. and they go out like, I don't know, 200 yards, not far, only 200 yards. And at 200 yards, they get the boat positioned, and you can see that it's a little off. The laser beam is no longer precisely where it had been. They then row out some more, and at a quarter mile, it is not so close. And when they go out far enough in the lake, it misses entirely. The laser beam is firing over their heads. This is because the Earth is round. If it were flat, the laser beam would be able to hit that target exactly the same way at thousands of miles. But we know that doesn't happen because we're standing around here and nobody sees Mount Everest from Brooklyn. The reason is the Earth is round. Mount Everest is real damned high and you would see it. We'd see the Rocky Mountains from Brooklyn. We'd see the Appalachian Mountains from Brooklyn. You know, hell, we'd see England from Brooklyn. But and people in England would be able to look and see the Empire State Building. So, yeah, the Earth is not flat, but it's one more conspiracy disinformation thing that people love to have.
The thing is, it doesn't matter how many reasonable scientific explanations you give to people who have this kind of mind bend, they will never believe you. They will never believe you. They will say you're lying. There's no such thing as a laser. It's all fake.
Well, I have been up to the website of the Flat Earth people, and they don't allow photographs. Photographs can be faked, so no photographs to try and prove that the Earth is round. And they have all these rules on their website. And in my opinion, at least some of it that's going on in the Flat Earth website is guys' ego trips. What happens is they say, hey, I'm brighter than everybody else, and I can maintain something that's totally stupid and obviously not true and argue for it and argue down everybody else. And that's what they'll do. And they'll say, oh, and yeah, you say that. Well, I say this because of this, that, and the other thing. And, oh, we aren't going to let that kind of evidence in here. It's fake. And I think that's what they're doing on the Flat Earth Society website. And it's quite a trip to look at the Flat Earth Society website.
What a way to spend your time.
Well, you know, people do all sorts of things. Some people watch TV.
Or better to watch pussycat videos online.
Yes, that would be pussycats playing the piano online is a much better thing to watch online than some of the crap from the conspiracy nutcases. Well, there is one fewer flat earth conspiracy crazy these days. A guy named Rob Skiba was hospitalized in September with low blood oxygen levels. This guy was a prominent flat earth crazy. He had apparently gone to what's being described as a Christian-centric conference in August called, quote, Take on the World, unquote. He didn't feel so good after that. Well, I should think that going to something like that, nobody would feel very well after that, considering how stupid it probably was. Anyway, while he was at that conference, he posted on Facebook saying that people would know whether vaccines were a solution or a problem, quote, within, I'd say, 2 to 3 years or so, unquote. He also said, quote, truly, I take no joy in saying this, nor will I if I'm the one still standing, unquote. And he complained that people, quote, gotta take the shot or else you can't be a teacher in a school or you can't work at CVS, unquote. So this guy's, you know, an obvious hellish anti-vaxxer and a flat earth guy, a prominent flat earth guy, it says, and he's saying, yeah, you're all gonna die from the vaccine, but I'll still be here, but don't worry, I won't gloat. Yeah, nice of him. Anyway, a video of Skiba has been unearthed showing him preaching opposition to the flu vaccine mandates in 2012, with the usual reference to inoculations as, quote, the mark of the beast, unquote, which we've pointed out in the past shows people like that as being a Christian who either doesn't actually read the so-called Book of Revelations, or else his reading comprehension skills were really poor. I mean, part of the Book of Revelation says only 144,000 people are going to go to heaven, and they can't be female. Well, that cuts out a whole lot of people. Also, they have to be virgins. How many of the Christian guys are going to say, oh, yeah, I'm still a virgin, you know? It doesn't say you have to be married and you're okay. It says you got to be a virgin. I mean, this is the Book of Revelations. 144,000 virgins are going to heaven, and they're not going to be female virgins. So, too bad. And, yeah, so again, either reading comprehension is really stinky among these people, or they never bothered to read the Book of Revelations. Somebody else is, you know, some sky pilot is preaching the mark of the beast, and they pick up on that. It's a catchy phrase. Oh, it's the mark of the beast, and you can't get to heaven with the mark of the beast on you, and blah, blah, blah. And so this is what they do. Ah, it is frustrating sometimes to even be reading about things like this. Anyway, so this Skiba guy was saying this stuff about vaccines nearly a decade ago, and he was saying stuff that we're all too familiar with today from right-wing ideologues. In that sermon from years ago, Skiba said that the side effects of mandated vaccinations, which at that time he was railing against flu vaccines, the side effects included, quote, counterfeit immortality, unquote, duh, and, quote, being cast alive into a sea of fire, unquote. Yeah, that's a side effect of the vaccine, being cast alive into a sea of fire. But wait a minute. Doesn't all this happen after you're dead? After you're dead, you can't be cast alive into any goddamn thing because you're dead, not alive. Well, again, they don't read a lot of the stuff they're quoting, and their reading comprehension is terrible, and they're stupid. So Mr. Skiba had been hospitalized in September after that lovely conference he'd gone to with all of his other Christian pals. And people who knew him posted status updates about his condition in recent weeks. On October 13th, they announced that Skiba had died. And his followers expressed shock that such a thing would happen to him. Yeah, the guy who says no vaccines of any sort, don't do this. I'm sure he had other health issues that he had an opinion on that were also completely screwed up. And, oh, what a shock that somebody like that would die. Gee, I guess he doesn't have any kind of immortality there. The friends of his, who was co-conspirators, who posted about all of this, they're probably as stupid as he used to be. Some of them expressed grief and reportedly some threw some conspiracy disinformation in to spice things up. Apparently, I don't know, the vaccine people assassinated him or something. Or maybe the people who think the earth is not flat went after him because they don't want that information to get out. Oh, the earth is flat. Don't tell anybody because they'll get you. Yes, the government is after you because the government wants you to think the earth is not flat when it obviously is. This guy Skiba was a filmmaker and writer, and his YouTube channel is reported to have had 210,000 subscribers. Really? Believing in a flat earth and opposing vaccines are quite compatible, and I'm sure there were a whole lot of other conspiracy disinformation things going on up there, but god damn. Yep, you got a whole lot of dopey people in the world. In other news of a sort, like this. Kevin Mitchum and Misty Mitchum of Virginia have both died of COVID-19. Both were unvaccinated. Kevin Mitchum had gotten ill and was admitted to a hospital the day before his wife died of COVID-19. So she gets sick and, you know, is in there, and then he's sick enough that he goes into the hospital, and the next day his wife dies of it. He lived for 2 more weeks after going into the hospital, and Kevin Mitchum was described as having been healthy and hearty, working in the construction trade with no underlying health conditions that put him at higher risk for severe disease. His wife, Misty, however, had diabetes and was, of course, at a higher risk for catching COVID-19 and of having a bad outcome. And I'll note that I'm elderly and I have diabetes and hypertension, so I'm really in a really sweet spot to get killed by this virus if I were ever to contract it, except that I've gotten my booster shot, so it's very unlikely to get to me. Anyway, they were both adamantly against vaccines for the virus. That is, until just before Kevin Mitchum died, when he asked to be vaccinated. Of course, by then it was too late. His lungs had turned into jelly by then. And these two people had 5 children and a grandchild. Kevin Mitchum's brother, Mike Mitchum, said, quote, "I knew how deadly COVID could be, so I went to my brother and asked him to please get vaccinated. His response to me was to show different memes and stuff that he found on Facebook. He believed all that to be gospel truth, and I could not change his mind." Unquote. The extended family is now scrambling to place the now orphaned children with relatives. This next piece here we're going to talk about is about some science stuff and about how some social stuff mixes in with science and how things can get a little messy sometimes. And you may have heard of the James Webb Space Telescope. And this space telescope is now scheduled to launch in December. Right now it's supposed to launch on December 18th. And we'll see if it goes up then. It has been scheduled to launch many, many times for some years, but something always messes that up. But they figure that now they've really got it, and the James Webb Telescope is going to launch on December 18th. And, you know, we assume things. We all do that. We assume things. We do it all the time. And I wasn't aware that I had been assuming something, and I had, and I've assumed it for years. And what I thought was going to happen is I thought the telescope was going to be named after Thomas William Webb, who was a 19th century Anglican Church sky pilot and very prominent amateur astronomer. And I thought they're naming it after him. Because he's famous. That's the Webb who's famous. If you ask people around the world, astronomy, associate a name of Webb with astronomy, the people who could do it at all would have come up with Thomas William Webb because he had a head start on the other guy. Anyway, the 19th century Webb had published books and articles on astronomy. His most famous book was Celestial Objects for Common Telescopes, which was first published in 1859, and it was revised several times after that. The final printing, the seventh printing, was in 1917 by his successor, since he died in 1885. I have the 1962 version of that from Dover. And Thomas William Webb's book was a mainstay of amateur astronomers well into the 20th century. Well, Turns out the James Webb Telescope is not named after him. Yeah, you know, I'd seen the name Webb associated with the new space telescope, which is going to provide improved infrared resolution and sensitivity over Hubble, and I assumed it was to be named after the old sky pilot. I had forgotten Thomas William Webb's first names. I knew Webb, and I say Webb Telescope, so I was making an assumption there, and I was not pleased with a sky pilot getting his name associated with a serious scientific instrument, but Thomas William Webb was an amateur astronomer. Turns out it's named for James E. Webb, who was the administrator of NASA from 1961 to 1968. Yeah, I was wrong about which Webb it was going to be. Turns out, not a great guy. And although I say, oh, you know, sky pilot, from the 19th century, why do we have to name a scope after him? He would have been better than this guy. There's an article in the May Scientific American, and it talks about this, and James Webb was a homophobe, not just a homophobe, but he was one of the people who started making policy, anti-gay policy, in the federal government. When he was at the State Department, his policy of purging gay, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals from the workforce was enforced by everybody who worked under him. And by 1950, he was aware of the policy, which was a forerunner of the anti-gay witch hunt, which is known these days as the Lavender Scare. And it says in Scientific American, quote, historian David K. Johnson's 2004 book on the subject, The Lavender Scare, discusses archival evidence indicating that Webb, along with others in State Department leadership, was involved in Senate discussions that ultimately kicked off a devastating series of federal policies, unquote. And the article, which is authored by, I'm just going to read their names and what's associated with them on Scientific American. The article is by Chanda Prescott Weinstein, who is an assistant professor of physics and core faculty in women's and gender studies at the University of New Hampshire. She's author of The Disordered Cosmos, A Journey into Dark Matter, Space-Time, and Dreams Deferred. Sarah Tuttle is an assistant professor of astronomy at the University of Washington. Lucianne Welkowitz is an astronomer at the Adler Planetarium in Chicago and co-founder of the Just Space Alliance. And Brian Nord is a scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory at the University of Chicago. And so, this isn't just, you know, it's not like our Paul Martin is saying this stuff. These are people who are heavily into the field, and they're very bothered by James Webb and what he did, both while he was at NASA and before he got to NASA, while his entire time of being in the federal government. And they said, it says here, astrophysicists who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, and asexual and or ally, plus non-straight identities not explicitly listed, exist and are marginalized. And this guy was discriminating and purging gay people, gay men and lesbians mostly, from various, whatever he was involved with in the government, state or NASA. And the article continues, quote, these practices are a continuation of history that dates back to Webb's era. Frank Kameny was an astronomer who was hired by the United States Army Map Service in 1957. When he was unwilling to provide information about his sexual orientation, he was investigated and subsequently fired. He could not find justice through the courts at that time, but he did spend the rest of his life as an activist. Unquote. And Kameny's, you know, being fired and all happened when Webb was active. And I knew Frank Kameny. I mean, he was an activist. He's from Washington, D.C. And I met Frank Kameny on a number of occasions because I was an old gay activist. And, oh, there's Frank Kameny. And, you know, he was an old man by then. I don't know how old he was. We were in our early 20s. We were activists. Some of us were our mid-20s. Some of us maybe a little later than that. But to a lot of us, he was this old man. I don't know how old, you know, I don't know how old Frank Kameny was at that time, but he was certainly younger than I am now, but he was an old man to us. And I had read about him and said, yeah, there's Frank Kameny and hello, how are you? And I was in various, you know, it isn't all running around in the streets and screaming and yelling. You got to have meetings. You got to have committees. You got to do things. And I didn't see him a lot because he was in D.C. and I was in New York. But we had things back and forth. Sometimes he came to New York and he came to GAA, the Gay Activists Alliance that I was in. We would talk about things and, you know, he would propose things. We would propose things. We had things where we went to Washington, D.C. and met him and talked. And there were other places we went to, neither New York or Washington, where he was and I was. So I knew I wasn't close with him, but I knew Frank Kameny. And, yeah, he was an astronomer, and he was really galvanized by the discrimination against him, and he did devote the rest of his life to being a gay activist. So, yeah, there was that. And so these four folks I mentioned earlier, they want the name of the James Webb Space Telescope changed. It says in their article, NASA has an opportunity to choose a new namesake that will embrace a future of freedom and inspiration for all. Some people had suggested that it be named for lesbian astronaut Sally Ride. That might be a good thing, the Sally Ride Space Telescope. However, in September 2021, that's last month, it was reported that NASA had decided not to rename the telescope as a result of this controversy. So, boo on you, NASA, and I'm sure there will be a lot of very good science coming out of it, and I guess some of us are just going to have to make remarks about the name of that telescope and see how it goes. I don't know. I know that Stephen Colbert won't mention Trump's name on his program anymore, and maybe we'll do a similar thing like that, where we will not mention the actual name of the official NASA name of the space telescope, or maybe we'll just call it the Sally Ride Space Telescope. I don't know what we'll do, but we do hope it launches in December. We do hope it gets up there successfully and works well. And, you know, it's science. So we hope that the science will happen despite the naming. Well, we've got some mail here. So right now, I think it's going to be time for us to bear it all and read some amount of your mail. And again, we haven't gotten to the mail that much, and so we're not necessarily doing everything in chronological order, but it's going, and some of this stuff is not recent. And, of course, we reserve the right to not read the mail from the trolls who harass us. Subject, possible relative? From Bill, and Bill writes, "Hello, R. Paul. I was looking at your website, and I saw the picture of Pickles and you. We have a couple of those, but yeah, okay, we have a few pictures of us. I was reminded of a picture of a little girl on the label of Kate's Creamery Butter, 100% pure. The picture does not exactly look like you, but the mouth and front teeth look perhaps a little bit like you. I just thought there was some kind of resemblance." I don't think so.
I think I looked at that picture that he sent us. Thank you. And
Then I looked at one of your baby pictures, and there's a little resemblance.
Well, you know, all little babies look pretty much alike. All newborn babies look like President Eisenhower. That was one of the things in the 50s. All the newborn babies look like President Eisenhower because they were bald, too.
But all two-year-olds do not look alike, so.
Yeah. Bill continues, I do not mean any disrespect. I just thought you may find it passingly strange or mildly amusing. My wife and I love your show and have been listening to it for years. We live in Kingston, New York, and hear your show on the internet. In the past, we have supported your show. Once I even spoke to Pickles when she was taking marathon bucks off air. Now, that was a while ago. I may have got it wrong, but was Pickles an officer in the Canadian Navy? That would be very cool.
Well, it would be very cool, but alas, that is not so, because that was something that our beloved pal Sidney Smith used to say on his show, Carry Your Wife. Sometimes he'd call me, you know, whatever, Nurse Pickles or Vice Admiral Nurse Pickles, just silly stuff, fooling around, joking around, so...
Yes, and that's Uncle Sidney you hear at the top of our show who starts everything off. He does the first station ID there, and that's Uncle Sidney. And his shows were, over the years, Sidney's shows were called various things. Mm-hmm. Carrier Wave was one. Mm-hmm. Saturday Morning with the Radio On mm-hmm. was the last name he had for it. And we won't talk about management at this point. But yes, good old Uncle Sidney, and we still talk to Uncle Sidney. Anyway, Bill concludes, all the best and hope we get through this COVID thing and come out the other side all right. Regards, Bill. Yes, Bill, I hope we all do get to come out the other side of the pandemic. It's the type of thing that, you know, not everybody goes through this, but every few generations you get a pandemic, and we've got one now, so here we are. We've had more than one. There was officially a pandemic in 1957 for the Asian flu. HIV, the AIDS crisis, the AIDS pandemic was there, and it certainly did a lot of damage, and now we have this one, which is infectious as opposed to... HIV, which is not infectious. You can't just catch it through the air the way you can with COVID-19. Anyway, moving right along, Fred writes, subject, Grand Prospect Hall sold. Dear R. Paul, as you may have heard already, the Grand Prospect Hall was recently sold. We all love those cheesy commercials with the husband and wife, but the husband recently died at 82 years old. And he gives a reference to the story, and it says, Grand Prospect Hall sells for $22.5 million after 35 years of making, quote, dreams come true, unquote. Yeah. This was a place you would go to have an event. If you had some event, you had a daughter coming out, coming out as a debutante. You could also have one as your daughter coming out as a lesbian. That could happen too. And you'd have events there, and the husband and wife, and it was kind of cheesy, but it was silly. And it was in Park Slope. It was in Park Slope, sort of the what would be the south end of Park Slope. And it was right around the highway there. And I don't think, at first I thought it was the space that my relative's church was in. They were Protestants. My relative's church was in, my two aunts and my grandmother. They used to go to church. But it looks more now, I don't know precisely where it was. I didn't pay attention to where their church was. But it now looks like it was maybe right near it. But I don't know. Maybe it was the same place. Anyway, yeah, I remember these things. And, oh, come here. And it was amusing when they used to do that. But $22.5 million for that. Man, I remember when the real estate prices in Park Slope were... down at the bottom of the barrel. I remember when you could pick up a brownstone on First Street between 7th and 8th Avenue for a couple grand at most. They were abandoned. In fact, there was a whole strip on the north side of First Street that was brownstones, and they were abandoned buildings. And we used to go in there and, you know, scream and yell. One time I held a beer bottle in my hand. I'd found it there. I wasn't drinking beer. I was just a kid. And I was debating, you know, this is a free-for-all here. And I was debating throwing it through the rear window of one of the rooms. And eventually I decided, no, I shouldn't do that. So I didn't do it. But, yeah, the real estate was next to nothing. My parents paid $34 a month rent to live at First Street and 7th Avenue in Brooklyn. And that was before that building had a fire and got basically divided up. This was a six-room railroad apartment, as they called it, and it was $34 a month, which was exactly what my father got for his disability from World War II. And so the VA paid our rent for 13 years there. And I want to mention Seth, who is a friend of ours and is a contributor to the show and donor, sent me a book. And yes, I got the book, Seth, and I will be reading it. Finally here, we have an email from Michael. Michael writes, subject, outro theme. Well, R. Paul, here I am sitting in my favorite bistro, Pastis, and on comes over the sound system your outro music. And I softly say to myself, quote, here comes Mr. Outro. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We really appreciate that you're listening to us. And we'll be back next week with all sorts of stuff. Coming up next is
Ralph Nader Radio Hour. And after that, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Froine,
who does all sorts of science fiction stuff on his program. All right, it's getting a little crisper out there. It's October. It's getting darker so early. And enjoy what you can of October here. And above all, remember what that hoping the telescope works but not liking its name, Dormouse, said.
Testing 1-2. Comrade, is this thing on? Is it
working? It's working good.
Saturday, October 23rd from 8 to 10 p.m. on WBAI Playhouse, a Huey P. Newton story by Roger Guinevere Smith.
The day I came out of prison was a hot, sunny day. The sun was shining, so, you know, I took my shirt off, and a lot of people wanted to read like a grand gesture. I'm pardoned to that. Like it was
compiled from the writings and speeches of the co-founder of the Black Panthers.
And a letter from the Hollywood studio says something to the effect of, "Dear Mr. Newton, we feel that you have star quality."
That's a Huey P. Newton story. Theater for the ear.
These Hollywood studios are a trip, aren't they? Because they're in the business of creating fiction. But we in the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense are in the business of creating non-fiction. You know what I'm saying? Non-fiction. We're making revolution.
Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. on WBAI New York.
Coming soon to a cinema near you. Here's a selection from the soundtrack. Hope you enjoy it. Available now on Panther Records and Tapes. In 8 tracks.
Greetings. This is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. Enjoy.
In communities all over the country, there are battles going on. Sometimes this battle is a war of words, but lately it's becoming more and more violent. At the center of the conflict is critical race theory. Join me, Bernard White of UPAMA, and Jamel K. Donner, Associate Professor of Education at William & Mary, Tanya K. Hernandez, Professor of Law at Fordham University, and David E. Kirkland, Professor of Urban Education at New York University, as they answer your questions and present the reality of critical race theory. Become a part of this online discussion Saturday, October 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. For free registration, contact upamainc.org/events. That's upamainc.org/events.